If you're sitting in horrible Seattle traffic right now, it's probably hard to imagine. Once upon a time, Seattle was a transportation planning pioneer. So what happened? Leonard Garfield is executive director of the Museum of History and Industry. He says we can look to our past to better plan for the future of the city's transportation needs. Garfield says in Seattle's infancy, business leaders were thinking about the fastest and easiest ways to get people and goods through the city.
If we've got hills, let's get rid of them. If we've got water, let's figure out the fastest way to get across it. That really is what led to planning. It was economic expediency.
So they were looking for efficiency. You mentioned, let's get rid of them, hills, were they, and water. Were there particular focuses, foci, I guess is the word, for what they thought would be most rapid and most efficient?
Yes, and that's what we're in some ways still living with today. They believed in a centralized business district. You know, downtowns really were the creation of the late 19th and early 20th century, and Seattle had a great one. So it was getting people to and from that central core that really was the key, and then creating neighborhoods that were sufficiently far away to be comfortable and livable, but close enough to get to the downtown area.
Was there a mass transit system?
So that's really what the result was. It was our first mass transit system. It was our streetcar system. And it began in the early 20th century. By the 1940s, the early 1940s, we had an extensive network. You could get anywhere in this city on streetcar. You could get downtown. You could make all kinds of connections. You could get as far away as Tacoma or as far north as Everett and beyond to Bellingham in really just a matter of hours without ever really having to change transportation systems.
All right, Leonard Garfield, you are speaking the dream for a zillion people listening. What happened?
Well, that's a good question. What did happen? I think we sometimes keep asking ourselves that. What happened was really the automobile. It was the rise of the car, the rise of privatized transit, the notion that not only did every American deserve a comfortable home and a job, but they also deserved an automobile. And when you give every household an automobile, suddenly you lose that density, you lose that importance of a central center, and you begin to lose the efficiency of a mass transit system.
So all these streetcar lines just became obsolete?
They really did. And by the early 1940s, really before World War II, the last streetcar was gone from service. They were literally scrapped and in some cases burned. We replaced them to some extent with a bus system, but it was a system that was much more fluid, far less centralized than the streetcar system had been.
So by the 40s, this stuff was all gone?
The last streetcar was really in the early 1940s.
That's amazing. I'm speaking with Leonard Garfield. He heads up Seattle's Museum of History and Industry. I know, Leonard, that in the 1960s and 1970s, some people did advocate reviving some sort of mass transit system. What happened to those efforts and why weren't they universally applauded and pushed forward?
Yeah, you'd think that a progressive community like Seattle would embrace mass transit. And in the 50s, in the 60s, even in the 1970s, there were ballot issues, many of them, that said, let's have a light rail system, let's have mass transit. They were routinely voted down by the voters. And the answer, Marcy, is the price tag. They were very, very expensive. And the compelling need for it really wasn't there in the voters' minds. They had a home, perhaps in a suburb. They had a workplace that maybe wouldn't be reached by these mass transit lines because the region was becoming much broader and less centralized. So it never was really a compelling sell. We simply didn't have either the density of a New York or a Chicago, but we also didn't have the voter will that saw mass transit as absolutely essential to the long-term quality of life.
So something like the monorail, which was built for the 1962 Century 21 fare, was that seen as transportation or was it some other kind of thing?
Well, I think it was seen as a prototype of what could be in the city of the future. Remember, it was Century 21 and it was happening 40 years before that was going to arrive. So in our fantasy of where we might end up, the monorail had a role. But would we build that monorail and extend it in the years right after the fair? The answer was absolutely no.
So there just was no will and there was, we flash forward 50 years from that fair, 53 years at this point as you and I talk. And when we look at the future, how can what happened in the past inform us.
Well, I think we have to look back at that early 20th century streetcar system. It led to a beautiful, thriving, vibrant downtown, and it led to what were called streetcar suburbs, essentially very coherent neighborhoods relatively close to the city center that allowed density. And whether that was Wallingford or Capitol Hill or the University District, they all were served by streetcar systems that provided quick access to your home and equally quick access downtown. It was a perfect recipe for a city that was increasing density. And I think that's the lesson we need to learn.
When I think of cities with centralized cores, or at least centralized mass transit, London comes to mind. The London Tube system, it's underground, is one of those kind of systems that has a downtown hub with spokes that lead out. It seems that Metro's buses are also organized in a similar way, that really the core is either Northgate or downtown Seattle, and we're running lines out from there. The light rail trains that are under construction two blocks from where you and I sit also have that same theme. Is that going to be enough to serve the region as it continues to balloon?
Well, I think in the 21st century, we have to consider several centralized hubs. Clearly, the east side as well as downtown are hubs of commerce and density and so forth. So it may not be a single downtown with spokes going out to a series of neighborhoods. There may be several centers which are all tied into the same network. So that might be a little different than what we experienced 100 years ago. But I think the principle is still there. You want centralized cores and you want easy access to smaller neighborhoods where people actually live.
So, Leonard Garfield, you work at a history museum. You're not a transportation planner, but you wrote about this for Crosscut Online. Have the regional transportation planners picked up on what our ancestors in this region did and maybe could use that?
Oh, I think that history is definitely providing lessons for today's transit plans. Clearly, what we are building now is essentially replacing and expanding what we already had. So the one thing to remember, though, that is good is that the investments we made 100 years ago and 50 years ago, we're still reaping benefits in strong neighborhoods and a strong downtown. The investments we make today, they'll reap rewards 50, 100 years from now. We have to keep that long-term perspective in mind.
What do you think our transportation future looks like?
I think I join a lot of folks, and I hope that it will continue to be one that's dominated by mass transit rather than the individual automobile. I think it really has to be, for a whole lot of reasons, economic, environmental, and really just quality of life.
Leonard Garfield is the executive director of Seattle's Museum of History and Industry. If you'd like to see pictures of Seattle's transportation past, you can go to our website, kuow.org.